This is session number 59, recorded on March 17th, 2008. This is side A, and we're going to take each particular quadrant and go across the content of that quadrant. So, Scott, did you want to say something before we do this?
No. Let's see. We're going to begin with the monad as the central pillar there, world government. We have familiar characters in there, LaRouche. Why don't you begin wherever you begin, and I'll jump in.
So this quadrant has capital concepts, holeopathic radio / satellite, then to the right, hadron on the same level, then monad, and then God. And then 1840 to 1900. So we're looking here, since this is an after image of the Android meme, it's an after image of a particular aspect of the Android meme. The Android meme doing a decade dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a radio environment, it's not a satellite environment. The after image of that, and that's indicated by the invisible environment, which I call holeopathic. It's like dark matter, right? Can't see it. It's invisible. So the collection in this quadrant is to point to a particular time zone or meme, but it's an after image of a meme, and that's why we're calling it hadron.
Now, is it a bit of a misnomer to call it an after image, because that implies the visual space?
Yeah, it's an after echo. In other words, it's tactility. It's not any particular thing, but it's an after image of tactility. So it's basically nothing there, okay? And
what are we spending all this time talking about nothing for?
Because once the television came in, television environment, which is the extension of tactility, and tactility is not a sense, it's the interplay of the sense. So when people discuss strings in string theory, or subatomic particles as resonating effects, they're talking about things that can't be seen or experienced, but they're trying to say something's there. All right?
Yeah.
So since the Android meme was a memory theater, we break it down into decades of memory. So this decade...
Memory theater. So we're dealing with a memory in a theater.
Yeah.
And whose brain contains this memory?
The Android meme, which is a replay of all that humans created and all their memories, crystallized in technologies.
Yeah.
So this or media, which includes language, so it crystallized in culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this situation.
So we're one step removed from, I think you've said before, by this time the humans are on the sidelines. The Android meme is going through this ritual.
It's inside us, but the chemical body is ghettoized and marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't completely marginalized when you consider all four bodies, but what we consider our physical body is marginalized. But we're very involved in the chip landscape and the TV landscape, which shrink and become TV body and chip body. Now, what are they made up of? This is what I'm saying. They're made up of. This is the atomic structure.
Well, they're made up of patterns. So this whole memory theater is some form of pattern recognition.
Right.
A pattern that has no substance.
Right. It's not nonetheless real. It just, since the Android meme is tactility squared, there is no content, any long-staying content of the Android meme. It's an effect, a hypnosis on people. But even that is ineffective to describe it, because the humans enjoy it. Not a manipulation.
All the humans know is that they're in some kind of a mood.
Right. Right. They see things. They hear memories of the Android meme. But we're describing the interplay of them.
Where do they hear memories of the Android meme? Reflected in the content in the media?
Yeah. Yeah, whatever medium, electricity, radio, computer, movies, that telephones that they're interacting with. But
yeah.
What is it that they are if you try to pin down what we are? What are we made up of? This is what we made up of. This is what this is our new anatomy I'm describing. So think of the TV landscape, the chip landscape, the astral landscape, and the chemical body landscape. You've got references taking the LaRouche quadrant. The reference to the chemical body landscape is the hadron, lung cancer.
What's the specifically the reference of the hadron to the chemical body?
Well, that's a subatomic particle. That's Western science.
Well, you have that in each of the columns.
Yeah.
The meson, baryon. So does the meson and the baryon represent the chemical body for that phase?
Exactly. In other words, if you look at the chart, since it's an interplay of tactility squared, you're going to have all its suggestions and memories seamlessly webbed and weaved all through the thing.
Yeah.
In other words, there's a mishmash. I'm delineating visually what the mishmash is made up of. And the mishmash is the convergence of the four bodies.
Right.
The mystery body being future situations that are not included necessarily in the chart, because we don't know what those constituents are, what we're going to discover.
Right.
So we have the chemical body represented by the hadron, meson, baryon, diquark, demonuclei. Now, those are very tiny parts of the chemical body. They're almost like suggestions by physicists of what our matter that we live in is made up of. So I had to show the fragility, the vagueness of our constituent chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very tiny compared to the other landscapes. So where is the astral body mentioned in this holopathic radio satellite? Can you find it?
Well, it would be the ether.
That's right, ether. And down at the bottom of it, it says base and sacral chakras. So the chakras are referred to, right?
Right.
Another aspect of the chemical body is the emotion, mental state of the chemical body. In this case, is paranoia in this quadrant. All right?
Yeah. Why is the base and sacral chakras under the heading of holopathic radio satellite and ether under the heading of hadron? Is that a distinction worth mentioning?
Yes, because the holopathic memes of radio satellite, TV satellite, computer satellite, satellite squared, and the anthropomorphic physical, they are non-material in relation to the chemical body, like we imagine our astral energies are, or our chakric energies are. Physics, Western science has not proven the existence of these things yet. Maybe they are starting to get some results in labs, but Western science does not recognize their characteristics as constituents of our physical life, right?
Right.
But other cultures do, and I'm not just specific to the Western culture here. So that's why they're in there, to show the invisibility of the Android meme.
Mm-hmm.
And the chakras are concepts, ideas about energies, subtle body energies that humans have according to some Asian cultures, so that their subtleness is another attempt to describe the Android meme. In other words, the Android meme is that subtle that to some cultures it might appear to be a possession of us,
mm-hmm.
a hijacking of the subtle bodies. Now, the point is, though, that this is 1840 to 1900, which is the period in the previous formula chart where radio is being built. And radio is something you can't see. You later can hear it, but it's when it manifests, it's electric, so it's tactile.
Mm-hmm.
So an aspect of tactility, since tactility is the interplay of the senses and just suggests different senses, only suggests them for a second. However, from the conscious point of view, that's interplaying these sensory inputs. The electric environment is tactile. So the suggestion of the relationship between the visual and the kinetic to the proprioceptive, osmic, and acoustic. And because radio is considered largely an ear phenomenon, its ground effect would be, in the far right-hand column, proprioceptive, osmic, and acoustic. Its figure or complementary effect. In other words, if you enhance the osmic proprioceptive acoustic.
Wait a minute. Are we looking at the same chart? I don't see proprioceptive on the right side here under 1840 to 1900.
Yeah, just go down to the, you see where it says officia, state, then second world, and then the ratio.
Yeah, but I don't see proprioceptive as. Oh, on my chart, I see the ground is, or the figure is visual kinetic, and the ground is osmic acoustic.
Oh, so is that, which chart are you, whose are you looking at?
This is the one that I printed from EarMap.
Oh, okay, well, he's made a mistake. He left out proprioceptive.
Okay.
If you look at the original, it says proprioceptive, comma, osmic acoustic.
All right.
Comma, acoustic. So trust me, proprioceptive is in there. It's in proprioceptive is in every quadrant.
Oh, okay.
Proprioceptive being kind of an inner sense, not tactility. Generally, people think of it as balance. Balancing oneself is the proprioceptive sense.
Right.
So you want to show these inner tunnels of sensation that are not tactility, but tactility includes. So, and it's electric, so it's got to be an extension of our inner landscape or our central nervous system. So that's one of our inner senses, proprioception. So we're looking at
this so in the ground here, proprioceptive, osmic, and acoustic, the ground being that which is sort of environmental and not really being paid attention to, figure being visual, kinetic is sort of what the Android meme is more fixated on.
Remember, that's close, but it's more precise. When you extend with the book the eye, the other senses expressed in culture have to compensate for the stepping up of the eye in the visual. So you have, in a visual Gutenberg galaxy era, the development of great music to counter the visual numbness or visual extension or visual hypnosis that the visual space creates. So it's an interactive ratio here. The balancing is actually, from the point of view of tactility, you're watching the adjustment of the different senses. So radio, on the apparent level, is acoustic. Then if you realize it's electric, so then you know it's an extension of proprioception. And there's also the element of smell, depending how the power of words and language on the radio to evoke sensations of smell. Now that is
if the ground is proprioceptive, osmic, and acoustic, and we go back to the other chart, 1840 to 1900, the ground is radio, which is being built. The figure, or what's becoming figure, would be the telegraph and the oratory. But I don't see those as being either visual or kinetic.
Yeah, because that's American culture. What we're dealing with here is more general around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is that the extension of three senses in the ground has to be compensated by the visual and kinetic. Now, it's the electric age, therefore it's the industrial societies that are getting this direct hit. They become more obsessed with visual reading materials, photographs, newspapers, and obsessed with movement. In moving goods with patriotic cell, as Zappa says.
Right.
The kinetic obsession of American culture is stepped up to an intensity to compensate for the cancellation of the visual and kinetic by the proprioceptive acoustic osmic ground. It's a what's called homeostasis. It's an equilibrium that's established.
Mm-hmm.
So in simple terms, you would not have Beethoven and the great music of Europe without a visually determined society as its ground. Without the book and then the splitting off of speech and song and instruments from each other and developed separately, which is what happens in European music from the 1700s on, you wouldn't develop the potential of a Mozart or a Beethoven. And those acoustic geniuses are there to bounce off the overwhelming ground of visual space. Okay?
Yeah, but you're talking about a period prior to 1840 to 1900.
Yeah. So here, this is what these ratios mean, is that when you have the radio environment come in the 30s, 20s, 30s, and 40s, you don't have to move anywhere. You're instantly everywhere once you turn on the radio. The world comes to you, and you go to the world. You actually neither move. It's simultaneous reception.
Right, but not at the content level. At the content level, you're fixated on the advertisement for, you know, hemorrhoidal cream, or that the President of the United States is making a statement about, you know, the economy or something. You're not perceptive of the fact that you've gone to the world and the world's gone to you at the content level.
The language, the data, the imagery is an inner trip. You're hearing all these things. FDR's speech, advertising musical, that's entertaining, massaging the central nervous system. What happens, though, is the culture becomes hyper in its attempt to create visual and kinetic industrial hardware culture. So you have the great growth of America's abundance in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, complicated by the fact that the simultaneity action of the radio creates a temporary depression. And how do they get out of the depression? They go to war. They go visual and kinetic, hyped up, uniformly mobilized as a hyper-productive nation to counter other nations who are being energized according to their cultural biases by radio also.
Yeah, maybe here's where my limitation that I'm putting on this is that from an individual perspective, I can only hear one level of content at a time, and typically that's describing something very specific, that I'm being sold or I'm being told. But from the point of view of the Android meme, all content is happening simultaneously. Because it's from the point of view, if I was the radio environment, I would be experiencing all the ads and all the talk show hosts and all the entertainment and everything going on simultaneously. I wouldn't be focused on one station and one line of thought,
right,
or imagery.
Like Finnegan's Wake.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have that experience, and then your other sensory conditionings, based on the industrial and literate environment, demand to be heard. So then you will become hyper-concerned about getting a job or working in a factory and producing goods that you can see. McLuhan used to say that when television comes in, we're going to have mountains of visual space. More and more books, more and more magazines. People thought that he said that books were obsolete. He did say that, but it didn't mean that they disappear. He meant by obsolescence that there'd be more of them, but they would not be the ground anymore. So you have more of the past produced once you have radio. There was so much wealth produced in the 20s, the bankers, the accountants of Wall Street couldn't control it, couldn't measure it, so the system collapsed.
Right.
Radio was partly the reason there was a major reason and the reason there was a collapse in Wall Street. So what is the radio provoking the increased production of? Visual and kinetic products, cars, tractors, trucks, agricultural instruments.
Mm-hmm.
All this industry.
Right.
And that's what Hitler mobilized and what Stalin mobilized in the 30s was great industrial enterprises. So filling in the acoustic and visual extensions to counter or balance off the incredible implosion that radio created. So the point is, it's the adjustment of the senses.
Right. I think it's worth making a distinction when you use the word the extension of visual space, because television extends visual space in terms of the eye's acoustic pattern recognition, you know, sensory input, which is different from extending visual space in terms of the fragmented effect of the phonetic alphabet, the isolated visual space. There's two visual spaces going on here. There's the isolated visual space, which is a feature of the phonetic alphabet, and there's the visual space of looking out through your eyes and seeing the world or taking in the television image. And
visual space.
Right. But oftentimes, McLuhan or even you, when you talk about the extension of visual space, I don't hear the distinction being made between, well, we're talking about multisensual visual space or we're talking about the fragmented visual space.
Well, we don't talk about multi-dimensional, multisensual visual space because visual space means that the eye is ground. There's no ground of the eye in the TV era. The eye is one of many senses in the interplay of tactility.
Oh, so we don't separate it out as having its own spatial dimension.
Yeah it does not. Did you say tension?
Dimension.
Oh, dimension. Yeah, it does not have a fulcrum to operate from. It's in the mix of all the senses, and that's why we call television tactile, because it's the mix of senses.
Yeah.
It's a process.
Okay.
So when we're talking about the juggling of sensory ratios here and their extensions, that's what was going on in the formula chart, the interplay of these different factors under ALP, Shem, Sean, ISSE, and HCE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned, how does telegraph and oratory and Lincoln relate to radio? Radio is ground.
Right.
So the interplay here. So what is the medium?
So are we still on the 1840 to 1900 column?
Yeah, we're going to do the whole, we'll do 45 or 50 minutes on this.
Right. Just before we leave that, I want to make sure we understand why Bob Dean is the...
Right, why Bob Dean is there.
There, yeah.
Tell me that.
Okay.
Now, under Eloy, which is above Hadron, that column, you have other media listed in LaRouche's newspaper, in McLuhan's Electric Media, in Thompson's Printed Book, in Croker, it's Movie, and in Dobbs' Quadrant, it's Magazine/Satellite. These are complementary to the homeopathic radio satellite, like visual and kinetic is complementary, interactive with proprioceptive osmic acoustic. So the newspaper is visual, right? And it bounces off the radio effect.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why newspaper is there. Now, the content of the newspaper is usually a town or a nation, a state medium dealing with visual boundaries. The Patriots are a product of a newspaper. So LaRouche, as an American patriot, writes about the effects of the newspaper environment. Those are his concerns. He wants to retrieve a sovereign United States and any other country in the world that joins him in relation to the world government that he says is sneaking up on everybody. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he represents the visual kinetic bouncing off of the global village effect of radio. And the medium that he's representing, its sensibility, is newspaper. So newspaper and LaRouche are interchangeable. When I'm reading LaRouche, I'm reading the effects of the meme of the newspaper. It's a meme because it's an after image, right?
Mm-hmm.
So LaRouche is a nostalgic replay of all the actual life and concerns that the newspaper environment created in the 19th century, 1840 to 1900.
Yeah, equating after image with the word meme gives me a new dimension to what I think you mean by after image.
Right.
Because meme is a bit more fleshy to me. It's a cultural it's a mixture of cultural influences that crystallize in a pattern. An after image, I can't. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, but listen to this, Scott. After image is the meaning of the chart in the 90s. The content of the chart is referring to previous solid environments, which once you get into the Android meme, there's only the idea of a newspaper.
Mm.
Because it's not constituent. It doesn't ground. It's just a remembrance. It's after image or meme refers to something that isn't ground anymore.
Right. But a meme is still a thing that is part, that is a component of the cultural composite.
Memes were real. The newspaper was a meme in the 19th century and early part of the 20th century.
Well, it's still a meme today. It may be homeopathic by comparison. Maybe shrunk down to something that you and I can
it's disappeared because, remember, the Android meme is tactility squared. So there is no content in the Android meme. There's just glimpses, quantum fluctuations, as Arthur Croker calls it.
Okay.
In terms of what we're made of, you cannot say where you are and what you're made up of today. You can only refer to what we were made up of, and then how that interplays, speeds up, accelerates, disappears, and you're left as dark energy. All right?
Yeah, but if you refer to newspaper, as we're doing here in the chart, I know what you're talking about, because the environment is still, I can go buy one, and I can conceptualize what it is. I have a meme.
Right. And that is a normal chemical body perception. It's not aware of the chip landscape, which creates this 24/7 erasing of everything constantly. And that's what happened this weekend. Bear Stearns got erased due to hypertactility. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually try to figure out who's in charge, where is power coming from, which medium is dominant, and what is the definition of our time, or who you are, if you get closer to the actual present fact, you will not be able to describe it in any
terms. Who bought Bear Stearns?
J.P. Morgan Chase.
Okay, so Bear Stearns got erased. J.P. Morgan Chase got enhanced. They're still there.
Right, but we will soon see J.P. Morgan go under.
Yeah.
Because they're all being erased. The domino situation. So temporarily, J.P. Morgan appears to be a viable constituent. But my chart points out that it, as well as any other constituent, will rapidly evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what the Android meme does. It creates a seamless web, a cancellation. That's why Jean Baudrillard in the late 70s said McLuhan was right to say the medium is the message, but that the medium does not exist anymore. That's what he said in the late 70s. He was right.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way to categorize what the medium was anymore, because we had become a seamless situation, which McLuhan predicted.
Yeah, he talked about medium as metaphor. It's the ability to translate one thing into another. That's how language works, all forms of language. They translate one thing into another. And when you can't translate one thing into another,
That's right. And so this chart shows when nothing can be translated into anything else, or at least in chemical body terms or in normal human sociological measuring standards, when you can't measure what's going on,
There's no language left.
Verbal language. The language that's left is the interplay of these media memes, which my chart shows. My chart is the language. Remember, Rumpelstiltskin, when his name was found out, he was controlled. This chart is an attempt to name the present situation. If you understand the name, then you've controlled it.
Yeah.
Through understanding it.
And here we are trying to put it back into visual, verbal terms.
Yeah, temporary visual, but we're making a futile attempt to limit it to a couple of media, speech and an eye, on the phone and being recorded, to point to aspects of the elephant known as Rumpelstiltskin. So we're describing the leg and the tail, right?
Yeah.
Now, all of it is in the chart here, but you got to do 59 sessions of talk to get beyond the limitations of talk.
Yeah, and if you're a hyper genius, you can just read up the Orphic Ante and Silencing the Solar Theater and look at the chart, and it's all right there. But if you're not a hyper genius, then you have to listen to 59 talks.
Right, and a sub genius wouldn't have a prayer reading. So looking at all these phases, it's like seeing, 25 fractals. You see a pattern, then it's repeated. Then you go into another fractal, and another kind of pattern's happening, if it's a separate one, and it repeats for a while, and then you jump into another one. So there's lots of different fractal nodes here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the nodes is the capitalized terms in the LaRouche quadrant, or the Holypathic Radio Satellite Quadrant, or the Hadron Quadrant, or Monad, or God, or 1840 to 1990, or the Quark Tune versus the Automobile, or Beatniks versus the Organization Man. In that quadrant are many little nodes.
Right.
Now, so we're talking about 1840, 1900. That's the dominance of industrial bureaucracy before it gets evaporated in the 20th century. And the medium that's sneaking up on the industrial bureaucracy is radio. Radio is the global simultaneous village, which will obsolesce industrial bureaucracies like Wall Street or like the Tsarist regime in the Soviet Union. And so we call it officia, or second state. See that under 1840, 1900? Officia state,
right,
in brackets, second world. Officia state, media state, Gaia state, Dissia state, and corporation state are terms from a book that came out in the middle 90s, American book, where this person analyzed the clusters around each one of those categories in the modern media experience. I lost that book. Don't know who wrote it. Maybe it'll show up someday. Can't remember his name. Don't know how to find it again. But I thought those five categories were useful. And then I juxtaposed beside them McLuhan's terms, second world, first world, fourth world, third world. Now, third world's a well-known term. Fourth world's a well-known term, first world and second world. But McLuhan used them in a particular way. He said first world was the most advanced Western nations. The second world was Russian bureaucracy, okay? Now, Russian bureaucracy, to me, evokes 19th century industry. That's what Stalin tried to develop in Soviet Russia, the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. In the 30s and 40s, and more had to suppress the new software economy that radio and television would bring in.
Yeah, right? And he tried to do it under the philosophy of communism, which didn't appear to be as vital as the philosophy of capitalism.
Right, and there's more to talk about that. We'll do that later. But the McLuhan said that hardware communism was a fact in England by 1840, 1850, even 1830. So there's hardware communism and software communism. The first world, the advanced Western capitalist countries, they moved into software communism, whole hog, causing all kinds of what Schumpeter would have called creative destruction cycles,
mm-hmm.
whereas the Soviet Union tried to hold back on software communism and focus on industrial hardware communism. So that's called the second world. The ideals, memes that are evoked by the industrial environment are crystallized in the newspaper. Lyndon LaRouche, his ideas and curriculum are based around enhancing industrial hardware, not old hardware.
Since America was built on the printing press, I would think they would be more threatened by software communism than Russia, which was probably not as visually based to begin with.
America was not, it was founded on the printing press, and that's for 100 years. It then moved ahead with industry faster than Europe by the time you get into the 19th century, really growing. And so America is largely kinetic as opposed to the visual alone. That's why the American cultural characteristic of anti-intellectualism is actually the kinetic industrial hyper movement, conquer the land attitude, is counter to the purely I attitude created by manuscript and print book culture in Europe. All right? So America is a combination of the visual and the kinetic. Mm-hmm. Europe isn't as kinetic. Europe is more proprioceptive and acoustic and even tactile. Okay?
Why did America become kinetic and Europe didn't?
Well, it had a raw wilderness that it had to conquer. So it would grab onto any tools and any new developments. And if you take LaRouche's idea, it's a certain philosophy that evoked the genius of invention. If you take McLuhan, it's a different reason. But basically, it was the wide open landscape of America to be plundered in and improved on and not have cultural resistance that would be imposed on in Europe through the Catholic Church or just its more feudal local sense of space. I mean, people didn't move across vast territories like they do in the United States. So if you have this vast territory, you want to make wheels and make them go faster.
Mm-hmm.
So Henry Ford comes along, or people before him. It's just that America developed the extension of our muscles and feet because there was a crucible there for it to do that.
Sure, that makes sense.
What?
That makes sense.
Right, so that's why we have visual, kinetic, that's a particular American mix, interacting with a non-American, non-kinetic mix, even though it was invented by Americans, the radio environment, enhancing the proprioceptive, osmic, and acoustic. And the response to that is, you could say, a paranoia. A Catch-22, there's the movie, or the book and movie Catch-22. And I have their mental body, which is an occult term, but it refers, with the word mental, to the idea of abstract thinking and scientific thinking. That's what that word is supposed to evoke, even though it's technically an occult term. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's in the same position as the other occult terms in the other quadrants.
Right.
The position being right under the novel. Causal body, right under the electric Kool-Aid acetus. Etheric body, right under gravity's rainbow. Astral body underneath Robert Anton Wilson's Illuminatus trilogy. And physical body under Norman Mailer's non-existent second book called Harlot's Ghost. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's part of the non-existence implied, right? In the Dobbs quadrant, the book is something that doesn't exist.
Right.
Okay, so these are clues to the meaning. So one of the things about the radio environment is that it creates a great escape for the chemical body into the discarnate state. It also makes the American kinetic culture, you could say, feel claustrophobic, might lead to paranoia, and it needs to escape by making more consumerist landscapes. Why is American considered hyper-consumerist, at least, you know, in the early part of the 20th century, more consumerist and maniac in that sense, than the rest of the world? Because it needed to make an escape from the implosion caused by radio.
Right, and if the implosion caused by radio obsolesced visual and kinetic space, then that started going hyper, and the Industrial Revolution started, you know, more machines making more products, pumping out more things to sell to people.
Right. And that creates a quote, materialist society where God appears to be dead.
Mm.
At least the literate God, the small town God, the pastoral God, right?
Yeah.
So you have in 1960, around that period, the fad of God is dead. I think that was a phrase coined by Time magazine. But God is dead is retrieved in the 90s in the afterimage of the Android meme. Now I'm jumping forward, right? We've been doing the LaRouche quadrant literally, what the constituents and era or decades it refers to. But remember, this is a picture of 1995 when the idea of God is dead can be recycled to certain cultural niche groups who, for some reason, resonate with that meme and are concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, the fundamentalist movements, televangelist movement, were concerned about and were angry that people were saying God is dead, right?
Yeah.
So they were reacting to the radio effect. I mean, McLuhan wrote that Newton brought in the image of God as a clock, or someone who wound up the universe and then left the universe and let it unwind.
Mm-hmm.
He said that in the 20th century, a new image of God would be evoked in pagan culture, and that would be the image of a radio.
Yeah.
Margins nowhere, centers everywhere. That's the electric image retrieved from the medieval notion of God. Now, the
God is dead resonates to 1840 to 1900 because Nietzsche said that in the late 1800s.
Right. That's, you know, literally, that's where it refers to, you know, because it's 1814 to 1900, definitely Nietzsche, but it's actually happening in 47 and 57. Under 1960, you see 1947 to 57. That is the period that radio is beginning to be subsumed by television. Radio is still a very powerful medium up until, you know, 50, 52, 53 in the United States. It takes a few years for television, which starts servicing after World War II, takes a while for it to become an environment, right?
Yeah.
So in the so the last gasp of radio as a constituent environment is from 47 to 57.
And why do you have the 1960?
Because it's crystallized in the decade memory theater as approximately 1960. Because remember, this is the Android memes version of the replay or memory of the period 47 to 57. Right?
Yeah, but why is there a offset between the Android memes memory and the historical occasion?
Good point. The Android meme is going to replay the chemical body's cultural development from 1960 to 1990. That's what we explained on the formula chart. Remember, humans finish the cultural architecture when they make satellite, which extends the whole environment, the planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
After that, the satellite, proscenium arch, and global theater start shrinking, 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 and the shrinking process is the growth of the Android meme. So the Android meme is going to remember, imitating humans, when humans created radio.
Hmm.
And it's going to act it out as a meme in 1960, 1990, but by 95, it's a holopathic afterimage, even less, right?
Hmm.
So remember, this chart is 60 to 90, but it's presented in 1995.
Yeah, I know you have to keep reminding me of that.
Right. And from the perspective of 1995, the radio meme is somewhere back about 1960. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Or the cultural images associated with the end of the 50s and before you get to the full-blown 60s, which is symbolized by McLuhan around 1965. But in actual fact, the effect of TV before there was an Android meme was 57 to 67, where TV became a figure in its effects, but was largely a secondary ground for most people. They didn't know they were getting massaged the way McLuhan said TV was massaging them in the period of 57 to 67, right?
Yeah.
And that was a replay, 57 to 67, is a replay because the Android meme can juxtapose all the phases at once. So it's a replay of the period 1900, 1918, when television was a real hidden ground being unwittingly built and extended by the onward evolution of human culture. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So back to So LaRue.
Yeah, let me make an observation regarding God is Dead in 1947-57 and the Holeopathic radio satellite.
Right.
47 is when all the big UFO sightings started to occur, and a lot of UFO meme ideas got kicked into the culture. And so it's interesting that happens in concert with the radio, holeopathic radio effect. And also, that's another replacement for God, is when people start thinking about extraterrestrials.
That's right. Now, that's why I picked 47. Many reasons, but that was the year the National Security Act was formed. Some people think the National Security Act was formed right after Roswell in June, July, 47. 47 is the beginning of the post-war period. I mean, you have the transition 45 to 47, you know, through 46, when the troops are coming home and people are starving in Europe, and they got to get that going. And I think they do the Marshall Plan in 48. So, and the World Commerce Corporation forms 700 companies in 47. So that's the beginning of the post-war period, right?
Mm-hmm.
And radio is the dominant ground at that point. Definitely, some of the interpretations of the UFOs back then, innocent ideas of civilizations coming from Mars or Venus, I mean, that was the extent of the sky for people, right? It's just that far out. They didn't have those Hubble telescopes yet showing galaxies and that. They knew there were galaxies in general, but the popular culture was at the level of the solar system. And remember, Orson Welles had the invasion of Mars in 1938 via radio. Okay? So McLuhan talks about how Joyce and Wyndham Lewis saw radio as the beginning of bringing back the gods or primal forces, ancient forces, mythic forces, and that would include science fiction imagery. So he definitely, and remember the other factor of radio, it centers everywhere, margins nowhere. That means we actually are inside the whole solar system and the whole galaxy, and entities from those physical locations are suddenly with us in the same electronic space.
Well, doesn't that imply that we already have the mythic government then by 1960?
Yes, we do. We have the mythic government begins definitely in the radio era, but there'll be a reason why we place it later, okay? So that's a good question, but that'll be discussed many hours from now, of why you have world government, solar government, universal government, mythic government, and lockdown Bob Rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
And remember, that's from the perspective of 1995.
Yeah.
So the UFO aspect of that period, 47 to 57, it's almost like later people started imagining themselves getting abducted. They were retrieving the radio effect, and it was the great escape, right? The idea, I'll get out of this tactile prison that the mixed corporate media global theater was imposing on me, this holeopathic prison, or at least perceived as that. That was that was a retrieval of the effect of radio. I mean, McLuhan describes Finnegan's Wake, which is largely about the effects of radio, he says Joyce is showing that radio was like invasions of great fireballs on the ramparts of the planet.
Hmm.
That's an image of UFOs. So I think we are coming near to the end. What's the time we get here?
We're at the 50-minute mark. We could go,
go for
another 10
minutes.
Minutes on this.
Right. So you brought now.
So
you brought up the UFOs. Okay.
Right.
The catch 22 is that you're a industrial society, literate people, in the 40s and 50s. Who are confronting this discarnate state, this massive simultaneous thing, that's going to create paranoia. And one of the factors of paranoia was McCarthyism, right?
Mm.
So that's why you have McCarthyism in this quadrant.
Mm.
It's a political paranoia by Western literate industrial individuals worrying or perceiving the collective implosion caused by radio and then later TV in the 47 to 57 period, they're worried about some kind of group collectivity or group mind taking over, and locally the Americans called it communism. So there was this rabid fear that everybody kind of believed within the propaganda that McCarthy created. Remember, McCarthy, if he just came, if I went on and said, you know, in 1947, or even today, went out and talked about the Android meme, there'd have to be a public massage going on by the media to make them receptive to my idea, right?
Right.
You can't just, I mean, why do some ideas work and others don't? Well, McCarthyism took off as a cultural paranoia in the last phase of radio when it was ground, because when McCarthy goes on TV in 54, that's the end of McCarthyism. It doesn't work in a new medium. So,
which we project onto the Russians, they become a scapegoat, maybe in the same way that the radio era caused the Jews to become a scapegoat for Hitler.
Right, right, right.
Except in Hitler's time, it was the real radio environment, and in McCarthy's time, it was the replay of the radio environment.
That's right. Starting to, it was becoming figure. And it doesn't become figure until he shows up on, because of Hidden Ground's television. And when he shows up on television, which is the real new ground, the figure of radio is seen.
Mm-hmm.
And but people have been mutated slightly by television so that they can't fall for the radio myth anymore.
Yeah, and that's when McCarthy loses his charisma.
Yeah. So
was Catch-22 written by 1960?
Yeah, it came out in the early 60s, but it was about World War II.
Okay.
But it's about the problem of the individual in the collective army. That's what Yossarian, he finds it absurd, the whole collective enterprise of the war, in terms of his personal integrity or whatever he thought he was, right? So it's an example of the individual.
Yeah, what's the catch-22? What's the conflict?
You can't get out of it. You're caught between a rock and a hard place.
You're offered two choices, neither of which are acceptable.
Right, because actually the environment is bigger than the two choices. It's a software discarnate implosion. It's tactile.
Yeah. Also, but in terms of the content of the book, he just has to wrestle with, I don't know the story, but I remember the TV show. I guess he's just stuck in a situation he can't get out of.
Not a TV show. It was a movie.
Yeah, and then it became a TV series. It was called something based on, yeah, it was something, I don't know. There was a TV series based on the movie. But,
like MASH?
MASH, yeah.
Oh, that was about the Korean War, but okay. I get distracted by that. What are you saying?
Oh, okay, my mistake, I didn't know that. Anyway, so the 22 appears in your chart here for the first time.
Yes.
Is that significant?
Yes, it's catch 22, and it's catch, and it's hyphen 22, whereas 22 is a number, a resonating symbol in the McLuhan quadrant. The number in LaRouche is 7. So remember, all the electric environments are tactile, and 22 kind of indicates tactility. But the early phase of tactility, radio, is not full blown tactility like television. So it's got a little factor in there that's a problem. It's catch 22, right?
Mm-hmm.
The human thinks they can catch the 22 and control it, but you can't.
Yeah, the 22 represents the reverberation of the electric environment?
Yeah, the tactile ratios, like visual kinetic is to proprioceptive osmic acoustic, that ratio, 2 refers to the essence of metaphor, which a metaphor is a figure against the ground paralleled by another figure as a ground, figure and ground interplay.
Right.
So that I used to say that Connie was the Wayne Gretzky of medicine. Wayne Gretzky was a young, you know, amazing upstart in hockey,
yeah.
Started at the age of 18 and stood out immediately, just like Connie stood out in medicine in Toronto very quickly once she became a doctor. So as Gretzky, as a figure, is to hockey the ground, Connie is a doctor to the medical world of Canada.
Right.
As the ground. So this is a figure. two-figure grounds. You get that?
Wayne Gretzky is the Connie of hockey.
Hockey. Right, right. So you have two-figure grounds. That's the basic definition of a metaphor. So you got two twos, right? Two pairs of two-ness. Figure ground considered two elements. Figure and a ground, that's two.
Right.
Then the other figure in the ground. So the basic tactile nature of metaphor is implied by the number 22.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a problem with catch-22, which leads to paranoia and lung cancer.
And yeah, why is lung cancer in there? Who was the big broadcasting guy? Was Arthur Murrow, was that his name, the big broadcasting guy in the, like, 50s?
Yeah, Ed Murrow?
Ed Murrow? Yeah. Was he in the 50s?
Yeah.
He's epitomized as being...
Yeah, he's the one who took on McCarthy.
Yeah.
A movie you probably saw a few years ago. I didn't
know that. And that was during the era when cigarettes were being sold to you even by doctors as being healthy. Everybody
That's
smoked,
right.
And Ed Murrow smoked himself to death.
Yeah. I don't know if it's Ed. Is it Ed Murrow?
I don't remember.
Anyway, Mr. Murrow. The thing is, yeah, the disservice of radio for the chemical body is symbolized by lung cancer, because everybody in the radio era smoked their guts out. Because they thought and smoked their lungs out, because it was seemed to be a necessary means of survival.
Yeah.
People ate cigarettes.
Yeah.
So that's a disease of that time. And, you know, Mickey Mantle died of cancer. It might have been lung cancer. I'm not sure, but I think it was.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, Mickey Mantle represents the baseball giant. And that's when, before the speeded-up society of the 60s and 70s started to emphasize basketball, football, and hockey... These became more popular sports than baseball. Baseball got a little anemic as the 70s and 80s unfolded because it was too slow for people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the slowness of that earlier period is symbolized by baseball, and that's why I put a baseball hero in there. And
yeah.
He's a white guy.
I remember I enjoyed listening to Vin Scully, I guess was his name, talk, you know, doing the blow-by-blow on the radio more than I enjoyed watching it on TV. It was too slow for TV, but it was just right for radio.
Baseball,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the main images you get walking around New York City is people listening to baseball on the radio.
Mm.
You know, people in stores and that. It's perfect for a slow visual game.
Yeah.
Or baseball mimes the visual kinetic culture. It's a game of statistics. Everybody in a particular position. And someone makes a sales pitch. And the idea is to get it to the catcher.
Yeah.
Without a competitor batting it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
So baseball fits that old industrial visual kinetic figure.
Right.
Right? Now, remember in the radio era of the 1920s after World War One is when you had... the League of Nations, an attempt to have kind of a world government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's an image brought in by radio, and that's why world government is in that category. Okay?
You don't have League of Nations on the formula chart, do you?
No.
Okay. But that's during this period.
Yeah, I have lockdown first half world government, 1900-1918. That's sort of like leading into the League of Nations. And then 1918 to 45 leads into the United Nations, locking down the other half of world government, right?
Right.
So we're looking at another person who analyzed newspapers in depth in the 60s was Mae Brussel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Mae Brussel goes into this quadrant.
Oh,
and
yeah.
One of the main issues...
She subscribed to, like, dozens of newspapers or
yeah.
something?
10 newspapers, I think is what you used to say. Now, remember, the music of that period is jazz, and of the 20s and 30s, and then in 47 to 57, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, the golden age of the cool jazz. Cool because television altered a bit, but still, jazz is happening.
Seems like Parker and Dizzy, that jazz is starting to get hot by then, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's hot with the swing bands. it always was hot. It gets cool in the 50s once TV comes in, and then you have the cool movement of Miles Davis.
Miles, yeah.
And other musicians of that period. The point is that jazz is the music. Now, we jump
probably
into
had
the
1950s. Would bebop characterize 47 to 57?
Yeah, yeah. Now the looking at it from 1995, I'm on my computer, and I can Google when that wasn't around, I don't know, 1995. But anyways, in the middle 90s, the Internet's coming in. I can hear jazz on my computer. And it's an afterimage of the jazz world when it was a ground form of the radio era, a reflection of the musical effects, acoustic space effects of radio, when it was actually constituted as an anti-environment to the radio world, as an art. I'm now replaying it as a memory. It's a memory in relation to what actually is dominating in 95. What's dominating? Hip-hop?
Mm-hmm.
Girl bands with girl singers? Anyways,
right.
The point is that, let's remember, we're looking back at this from 95. Right?
Right.
So, another thing, because radio intensifies the eye, because the eye has to recover itself, if you bring radio into a literate culture, the acoustic effect of radio has to be recovered, balanced off by the eye. So you have a lot of categorization, or what's called nominalism. The names of things, the scapegoating, calling someone a communist or a Nazi or a capitalist, are part of the radio era. The verbal speech is paranoid, and it's grabbing on the visual categories, which in philosophy is called nominalism. All right?
Nominalism.
Naming things independent of their characteristics.
Nominalism, when you sort of equate the thing with its name?
No, that's nominalism is the opposite. It says that any name can apply to any object.
Hmm.
And that is a result, McLuhan said, of literacy, where you lose the sensibility of how names fit the objects. You miss that multi-sensuous awareness, and you start emphasizing the eye, which separates a subject from object. So the philosophy that any name can apply to the object in an abstract sense, independent of the object's onomatopoeic effect of evoking the right name, which is very common in preliterate cultures, so they name their kids, right? It's based on what the kid evokes.
Yeah.
The vibe the kid gives off. So the visual extreme of detachment, almost like a schizophrenia, of visual space, is expressed in the philosophy of nominalism. That's why nominalism is in that quadrant.
Okay.
So you see, it's a listing of effects that resonate with that original period of radio, which is the 20s and 30s, up into the early 50s, replayed as an afterimage, and the names in the quadrants, the categories, refer to different topics, but also they are repeated in the later quadrants. So there's actually themes represented by the different names. Like nominalism is replaced by analytical positivism in the McLuhan quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
Then comes in sensationalism. These are philosophical terms or schools. Then comes in critical theory in the Croker quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Right.
So you see that nominalism has nothing to do with Mickey Mantle or lung cancer or jazz.
Right.
But they all are human institutions that came out of earlier cultures that fit and resonate with the radio era and subside when you move out of the radio era. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the branch of grammar that has to do with the analysis of the origins of words?
It's not that is grammar.
Yeah, but there's grammar, there's different, it can be broken down into, it's not epistemology, it's something.
Oh, you mean
else.
Philology?
No.
Etymology?
Etymology, yeah. Etymology tends to look for the source of words in perception, I think, as having arisen from the perceptions. Or being evoked by, kind of like the way that the
onomatopoeia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's quite grammar is more aligned with rhetoric in the acoustic sensibility than the visual dialectic.
Oh, okay.
Now let's, and Patsy Cline fits into that era, so let's end at that point.
All right.
Time to take a break.
We'll take a break. Be back in a few.